You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Tour de France, brought to you by iWoka, flexible loans built for small businesses. iWoka.co.uk. Today, we're in Grand Colombier.
Got my pink ones if you want. I can lend them to you. Well, you look like Bradford with the.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in the Alps, Richard.
We are
in the Alps. We're in Aix-les-Bains.
The Jura police aren't around.
You're sure we are?
We are. We are in the Alps.
Yeah, we can
almost hear the lake lapping.
That's the swimming pool.
Oh, the swimming pool, yeah. Lovely place, this. Very quiet. Mm. Nice. And this will be our rest day retreat.
Francois and I were swimming earlier, doing some lengths, having a little race. It was David Wilkie against Michael Phelps out there.
Absolutely. I won't tell you who won, but because we're not actually racing.
Where were you, Lionel? Why weren't you swimming?
I was watching the Tour de France.
This was after the Tour de France.
Oh, after the Tour de France.
We watched the Tour de France very closely as well. It's because you can't do downhill swimming.
You can do downhill swimming. Tom Daly's very good at it.
Oh dear. What a ridiculous start to tonight's episode. A highly significant stage. A dog barking in the background.
Yeah, friend of the podcast, probably.
Probably. Egan Bernal, the big story, I suppose, today. He cracked and lost over 7 minutes. You know, his chances of defending his Tour de France title are gone. In terms of the, you know, who will win the yellow, other than that, we're not much clearer, I guess. But it was an incredible show of strength today from Jumbo Visma, wasn't it?
There was a great tweet to sum it up by a guy I don't know in French saying the Grand Colombier belittled Colombians.
It did. It wasn't a day for the Colombians. A bad day. And, you know, Nairo Quintana was another one who slipped out of the GC. Sorry, Lionel. I know we're coming to your tail via tap, but we're just running through things. I mean, Quintana... I just wanted to mention that I saw him at the start today, and he was caught up in the crash with Bardet a couple of days ago, and all the attention was on Bardet, but Quintana this morning looked really not great, and he was quite bashed up, and you see him slip out the back, and I saw a few comments on social media about that, as if, you know, Quintana's failed or something. But we know from our audio diarist Pavel Sivakov what it's like for a rider to be recovering from serious crash wounds. You're not anywhere near your best, and unfortunately, it's a great shame because Quintana looked to be in great shape. He's not at his best either. Tail of the attack, please, Lionel.
You just thrown to me there just as I was taking a little sip of our podcasting wine there, Richard, available from Divine Cellars. Stage 15 from Lyon to Grand Colombier in the Jura. As last night, I think I said it was going to be like an alpine stage, which it was. It was like an alpine stage.
The problem with that is people can go back and listen and check exactly what you said.
Yeah, I didn't correct you last night because I thought maybe it would go unnoticed, but unfortunately, no.
Yeah.
Don't try and get yourself off the hook as well, Francois. Anyway, it was an Ineos Horribilis for defending champion Egan Bernal.
Yeah,
now, that's a reference that you've got to be over 30 and British to get, probably. It refers to Queen Elizabeth's Christmas speech, I think it was, in 1992, after a particularly grueling year for the royal family. She didn't win the Tour de France that year. Windsor Castle set on fire as well. And she described the year as her Annus Horribilis, and it just worked for me. It was... I can't take credit for this one. I saw this one on Twitter. The Ineos Gren Odeers had no answer for Team Jumbo-Visma, who weren't so much the TGV but the TJV. Do you see what I've done there? I mean, this is great, isn't it? Anyway, the stage itself was flat for about 99 kilometres, and then it went over the Monte de la Selle de Fromental, which sounds like a cheese to me, and then over the Col de la Biche, and then up to the finish at Grand Colombier. Very tough, very picturesque climb, and without the fans on it, looked fantastic. I thought it was a day when you just absorbed the racing and there was nothing else getting in the way, was there? We'll probably talk about this incident first, but the first notable thing that happened in the stage was an incident, a coming together between Bob Jungels of De Koenig Quickstep and Sergio Higuita, the Colombian champion of EF Education First, or EF Pro Cycling, sorry. Jungels was swinging off the front of the bunch after doing a turn. Higuita had drifted out to the right, and basically Higuita's front wheel collided with Jungels' back wheel, and Higuita, the Colombian champion, is out of the race, unfortunately. Bob Jungels did apologise for that, but it was just one of those racing...
It was a mistake. I saw, again, comments that suggesting that somehow... I don't know what they were suggesting. It was a mistake. Jungels checked back and swung out quite dramatically, as you do. He just attacked, swinging out, let other people come through. Unfortunately, Higuita had just had turned around as well, just after Jungels did. And sometimes when you turn around like that, you drift out, and he drifted out behind Jungels. And so when Jungels swung out, his front wheel caught Jungels' bike, which was, terrible, terribly unfortunate and unlucky. And he hit the ground very heavily indeed. So his race was over soon after that.
It was, unfortunately, Well, the racing was furious from the start, and eight riders got into the break, including our audio diarist again, Simon Geschke, with his CCC teammate Matteo Trentin, Bonifazio of Total Direct TV.
Jumbo Visma. It's a training for tomorrow's rest day, I suppose.
To be fair, that was going slower than Tom Dumoulin on the final climb, that train. Bonifazio of Total Direct Energy was in there. Kevin Ledanois of Arkea Samsic, Marco Mercato of UAE, Pogacar's team, of course, Jesus Herrada of Cofidis, Michael Gergel of NTT, and Pierre Rolland of B&B Hotels. And, once they got into the climbs, first of all, Gergel was away on his own searching for NTT's first stage win of the tour.
Was that a Google joke there?
Yeah, I think it was an attempt at a Google joke, but
only because of the arched eyebrow. Literally the only clue that was a joke.
Geschke, Herrada and Rolland were chasing behind, and already pretty early in the stage, and with the climbing only just beginning, the Ineos team was they were shedding numbers at an alarming rate. They were kind of falling apart, weren't they? There was one intriguing little moment with about 52 kilometres remaining when Mikhail Kwiatkowski sort of dropped back out of the group to visit the doctor's car, and we weren't too sure what was going on there. Towards the top of the Col de la Biche, Rolland joined Gergel, and over the top...
Gergel. You're calling him Gergel, and you're now calling him Gergel.
What a spectacle it was to watch Gergel.
Anyway, they were 22 seconds ahead of Herrada and 2 minutes and a bit ahead of the bunch, so they were never going to stay away. Rolland remained out front until a couple of kilometres into the final climb of the Grand Colombier. And, it all kicked off with a fierce pace being set by Wout van Aert again for Team Jumbo-Visma. The first sign of anything amiss with the high-profile Colombians was at about 13 and a bit kilometres to go. Quintana first of all dropped back, didn't look anything out of the ordinary, but then the gap opened, and then before you knew it, Bernal was struggling and was with Kwiatkowski and Castro Viejo, and they were losing time, you know, by the fistful quite quickly. And Jumbo-Visma took the opportunity to turn the screw. Wout van Aert did a huge turn again. George Bennett did a big turn. Tom Dumoulin did an enormous turn towards the top, and they didn't even have to use Sepkus at all today. Adam Yates had a go with 7 kilometres to go, and as I say, as the group didn't really slim down all that much from, despite the Dumoulin pace. Right at the finish, Richie Port had a go, and he was the first person to really crack the group open, and four riders emerged ahead of the others: Richie Port, Primoz Roglic in the yellow jersey, Tadej Pogacar and Miguel Angel Lopez. And just as he did last Sunday in the Pyrenees, Tadej Pogacar finishes the week of racing with a second stage win. It's won the Grand Colombier stage ahead of Roglic. Richie Port third, Lopez fourth. Then came a group of Mas, Kuss, Lander and Yates, followed closely by Uran. And the damage, as you say, Richard, Quintana at 3 minutes 50, Bernal 7 minutes 20 in the end. And so overall, Roglic... he's still in the yellow jersey, of course. Pogacar is now only 40 seconds behind him. Uran up to third at 1:34. And as you say, Bernal's Tour defence is pretty much over.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWoka. If you run a small business, find out more at iwoka.co.uk. iwoca.co.uk.
Thank you very much to iWoka, our title sponsor. And we're here at the Tour de France thanks in part to iWoka's support. They came on board in March, and if you have a small business and you want to know how iWoka might be able to help you, and there are lots of ways they can help you, go to iwoca.co.uk, iwoca.co.uk. And thank you to iWoka for helping us make this podcast at the Tour de France every night. And here we are after a really exciting, well, was it an exciting stage? It was in a sense, there was a sort of a slight sense of disappointment I felt in that there were still no kind of cracks between the top two, Pogacar and Roglic.
Which makes the end of the tour even more exciting.
It does. I think people were expecting attacks. The attacks were out the back, weren't they, by Bernal and Quintana mainly. But, you know, that group was... It was just shedding numbers out the back. It was quite big at the top still, as you said, Lionel, and quite controlled. Although Wout van Aert and Tom Dumoulin in particular set pretty fearsome pace up there. I mean, it was interesting. Adam Yates attacked just as George Bennett was finishing his spell, and that was a decent effort. He got a little gap, but we saw Sky do this many times where there's no panic, no sense of panic at all. They just keep a very steady pace and know that they will gradually wind them back in. And I thought Adam Yates actually did well to have a go like that and then still be there at the finish.
What's interesting is, because those two things did happen at roughly the same time, and it'd be fascinating to know whether Yates timed that move knowing that Bennett was coming off, or whether the move prompted the change of pace setting at the front for Jumbo-Visma. But I mean, the fact that they didn't have to use Sepp Kuss at all today really just highlights their strength, doesn't it?
And, you know, it was amazing, really, to see Wout van Aert at the front setting the pace for about 7 or 8 kilometres up that climb. And before that, Robert Hessink, you know, who was at the front for a long, long time. But, you know, Robert Hessink is a rider who could... He told me recently that he reckoned he could still finish top 10 in the Tour de France. If he was riding for himself. You know, he's a quality rider in a completely different role now. He did a lot today. Then Van Aert, when he took over, he was at the front when Bernal was dropped and when Quintana was dropped. Now, clearly something wrong with Bernal. I've been trying to get hold of Team Ineos Grenadiers tonight, and all that Dave Brailsford said is that there's clearly something up with Bernal, and they're going to obviously look into that. Now, they would say that, but he didn't look himself. Quintana as well, as I said, he's suffering from these injuries that he suffered. But nevertheless, to see Van Aert at the front tapping out that rhythm and these kind of pure climbers going out the back was quite a spectacle, wasn't it?
There were suggestions by some of our colleagues that Jumbo-Visma were not as strong and not as good as that Team Ineos of the old days, and that the baton had not quite been passed over to them. I find this very, very, they were not watching the same race as we did. I mean, there were some illusions about Jumbo-Visma. In a way, I think they probably rode more cleverly than Team Ineos have done or Team Sky have done in some years. Take for instance yesterday or the transition stages. You'll never see Team Jumbo-Visma trying to set the pace, or you know, they just keep their energy for the stages that matter. This one mattered obviously, and they did a destroying job the way Team Ineos used to do it, or Team Sky used to do it, exactly the same way. They were as impressive or maybe more impressive. The only little difference was that Roglic didn't win in the end, because they have this kind of a stone in the shoe that's Tadej Pogacar, and that's the interesting thing, and that's, I think, that's make the end of the tour really exciting, is that if you see actually Roglic maybe is spending too much energy staying in the wheel of you know, guys like Hessink, Van Aert, Dumoulin, which is amazing, you know, and being always cautious and watchful of what's happening. Whereas Pogacar doesn't need any teammates. He's just, you know, he stays behind in his place and keeps you know, keeps all his energy for the final sprint and the final surge.
Francois, think that Pogacar is going to win.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's won every Sunday. So if he wins next Sunday, what can he win?
The bunch sprint on the Champs-Élysées.
Well, if he does, you know. I don't think he'll bring the bunch sprint on the Champs-Élysées. I wouldn't be surprised. If they ride it, you know, cleverly, and they do actually, the UAE Team Emirates, three stage wins, there are only five of them left in the tour, and so they don't have anything, you know, nobody's really, you know, they don't seem that threatening. I think if they're clever, they're not going to take the yellow jersey too early if he's in a position to do it. Let's remember, he lost the time he lost in the Echelon. Had he not lost that time, he would have exactly the same amount of you know, gap over Roglic than Roglic has over him. And my impression now is that if Jumbo-Visma and Roglic really want to win that Tour de France, they're not going to drop Pogacar in the mountains or in the climbs. They really need to do something either on the flat or in another echelon one day or in the descents. Otherwise, so far Pogacar has shown that he's probably as strong as Roglic in the mountains. And for that final kick to win stages, well, twice out of three times, you know, he beat Roglic. So, yeah, it keeps the race exciting, and the Jumbo-Visma domination is, you know, flagrant. But in the same time, they've got this little guy, you know, sticking to their wheels, and they can't get rid of him. That makes the third week really, really interesting.
I think the thing about Jumbo-Visma, and to use a football analogy, I'm sorry here, it's as if they've had 80% possession and won the match 1-0 today, isn't it? Because the gains that Roglic has actually made are tiny in the grand scheme of things. For all that dominance, for all that effort, it's a handful of seconds over anyone else that counts. Okay, he got the time bonus as well. And actually, his lead over Pogacar is reduced tonight. Mm, so it's a kind of an awful lot of effort for not very much gain. And I just wonder why Roglic wouldn't go from try something from a bit further out. Why wait until somebody else splits it?
But as you said, they didn't even have to use up Sepp Kuss. There was still, as long as they keep it controlled like that and make it so fast that Pogacar also can't attack, then he'd probably win the tour.
But people have been making the point to me I think we've all heard this point, that Roglic's performances in late time trials and grand tours is not I mean, it's always difficult these days for the GC riders in that final time trial. It can be, you know, it's just a battle of strength to squeeze out whatever is remaining. Just looking back at the Slovenian Time Trial Championships, which was, I think, the first race after lockdown eased in Europe, it was basically uphill, 15.5 kilometres, about 800 metres of climbing gained, and that's the only time that Pogacar has beaten Roglic in a time trial.
Race, because the road race was first, actually, right. And then the time trial. Okay. Yeah, Roglic won the road race and Pog won the time trial.
So looking ahead at La Planche de Belfi, you would ordinarily say, well, Roglic will beat Pogacar in a time trial, but if it's a pure climb, who knows? I mean, it could. 40 seconds is a decent lead, but
you wouldn't,
I think,
feel comfortable.
You wouldn't feel comfortable. Anything goes wrong, any
and,
issue
and
with the bike,
say,
and that's
Francois. That's the problem they have. He probably needs more time going into that time trial, and it's difficult to see where Roglic's going to gain it going uphill with Pog sitting there.
No, exactly. I mean, as I said, well, they need to find something different. As we saw in the recent past, actually, that, you know, with all these guys, you know, having their eyes on their numbers, as they say, you know, on the parameters, it's more and more difficult to make a big gap on the climbs. As we saw today, as you said, well, I mean, the selection was made from the back, and why did nobody really attack? Probably because they all, you know, had eyes on their power meters and you know, they're not attack. There was an interesting tweet by Jonathan Walters today about Rigo Urán, about power meters, saying that, well, Rigo, you know, rides old school, you know, with no, not looking at the power meters, but, you know, feeling his hurt zone and you know, feeling, well, how hard he can go. And look at the results, you know, by feeling yourself, judging your, you know, your impressions, because you know yourself well and your experience. Well, Rigoberto Urán is the Grand Colombian today. He's third now overall. You know, in, well, you never see him on the attack. He's never quite, you know, towards the top.
He's on the podium at the moment.
But he's in the podium at the moment.
The guy who really impressed, I mean, Wout van Aert, obviously, is, you know, attracting a lot of comment and questions as well, because he's a big guy. He's winning bunch sprints. He's winning classics. And here he is leading the Tour de France up massive mountain passes. And that's, we haven't seen that a lot, but he's just a guy in incredible form. And one of the great sort of intrigues of this season is, you know, what have people done in lockdown? How have they prepared for this? Have Ineos got it wrong? Has Egan Bernal got it wrong? You know, hear sort of rumours about Geraint Thomas maybe having overdone it. He's now going pretty well in Italy in Tirreno Adriatico. Maybe needed a rest, you know, and we just don't know, and that will come out in the wash, I'm sure. But Dumoulin, you know, to see a recent winner of the Giro in that role of basically domestique.
And second in the Tour, of course.
And second in the Tour 2 years ago. I'm sort of disappointed in that, in a way. But I also felt that in the third week he might come good, and he's climbed up to 10th now.
That's right, yeah, back into the top 10. And I can see him, you know, well, he, obviously he's working for Roglic and he will keep on doing that. But, you know, with the you know, consistent demolition of the rest of the pack and the field by Jumbo-Visma, I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, raise his...
Well, there are a few guys going backwards ahead of him. Not literally backwards, but metaphorically.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast Team Car at the back of the pack, please.
Our Tour de France coverage is sponsored by the next generation Watt bike Atom. And before the Tour, you tested it out, didn't you, Lionel?
I did indeed. And in previous episodes, we've heard about how the Watt bike hooks up easily with all of the best known third party training apps. But today I want to talk about the Watt Bike Hub app, so Watt Bike's own app, which I downloaded onto my phone. There's a whole range of workouts, tests and training plans to keep your sessions varied and challenging. By the time you get home from the Tour, it won't be long before the clocks are going back and indoor training will come back into its own again. And, well, you know, I'm kind of mentally fragile. I like to mix things up to keep myself motivated. And with the Watt Bike Hub app, you can basically do anything you want. And the basis for any indoor training block, as you know, Rich, is the good old FTP test. That's basically a 20-minute interval, which is designed to work out your functional threshold power, which is the watts that you can sustain for about an hour. So once the Watt Bike Hub app knows your FTP, it then tailors every test or workout to your own level. One of the things that the Watt Bike Hub app has added while the Tour de France has been on is simulating some of the climbs from this year's Tour route. So you can ride the Col d'Aise or Orsier Molette or Montaigual or the Porte de Balès, among others.
Well, if that sounds like something you want to incorporate in your training, the Watt Bike Atom is available to buy now from £90 per month. See wattbike.com, wattbike.com for details.
Talking about lockdown, there was a very interesting interview about, you know, of Pierre Roland at the end of today's stage. Pierre Roland was, you know, stayed in the front for quite a while in the day stage, you know. Was actually very active in the last 3 days. He was, you know, finishing second once, fourth another time, on the attack every day, and he did the same, you know, and tried to tackle the Grand Colombier. You know, I think he had about 2 minutes over the rest of the bunch, and finally was reeled in by the leaders and the GC contenders. But he said something that about the lockdown that he actually, you know, it actually was a welcome break for him, and it might have been the case for other riders because he'd been doing like two GCs, two Grand Tours every season for the past 5 or 6 years, and kind of losing the you know, the sense of what he was doing. Like it became kind of a routine, and to be locked down, he said he realized what a great job they were doing, what a privilege it was to be able to live from riding a bike in the countryside in the open air, you know, and especially today without you know any spectators, really kind, you know, a man against the mountain. And he said it really inspired him, and as soon as the lockdown was lifted, he actually rode from Orléans to the Massif Central for 300 250Ks, just a normal little training ride, you know, because he needed to feel that you know, that sense of freedom, and it might, for some of the riders, have given them a new perspective on their work, on their career, and for others, obviously, you know, they. Maybe also the tightness of the schedule, the way now, you know, the whole season is kind of packed into 3 months, is having, you know, is leading to issues that, you know, we're not aware, health issues, we're not aware of. I mean, crashes, as we saw before the tour, were many crashes. There are always crashes in the Tour de France, but I can't remember crashes being so crucial in the GC battle as they were this time, because Quintana out of the contention crash, Bardet out of the Tour crash, Thibaut Pinot out of contention crash. I mean, all those guys who are not doing as well as we expected. Mm. I don't know about Bernal, but you know, there's obviously been crashes, crash issues or health issues, and well, most of the time, you know, it's different. Look, you know, a team is better than the rest. A guy just doesn't have the legs. But this time, you know, this crash issue and maybe the lockdown had an impact. We very difficult to define.
I think we'll find out more about that. And it's you know, the case of Bernal is fascinating. He hasn't crashed, you know, and last night on the podcast I was saying that he was in a very strong position, really, on paper. Mm-hmm. He was 59 seconds down, and then tonight he's dropped 10 places and he's 8 minutes 25 down, and I mean, he did not look himself at all. He was in real trouble, and you know, I'm trying to get in touch with Dave Brailsford and his coach, Xavier Arteche. But we spoke to Xavier Arteche a few weeks, well, maybe a month or so ago for the podcast, and he talked about, you know, the challenge with Bernal was always kind of holding him back and stopping him from doing too much. And he was doing monster rides. And as I say, you know, we heard this about Geraint Thomas, that perhaps he'd done a bit too much, especially in the camps just before racing resumed. And it could be the case for Bernal, yeah, too, that he's just overdone it.
Overtraining is known, you know, as one of the main reasons why a rider underperforms. And maybe because of the change of schedule and because of this, you know, packed schedule, all of a sudden you have to do all those races within 3 months instead of a year. Maybe that led to some... Maybe you know, coaches and riders were a little bit into the unknown and not knowing exactly how to prepare that period best. And yeah, overtraining may be an issue. It was for Bardet last year. He, you know, he said he had actually overtrained, and it's once again, it's a classic, you know, problem for riders. And yeah, well, we'll know more about Bernal soon, I'm sure, but it could be an issue.
It's difficult to overstate, I suppose, the significance of today, because really, since 2011, Team Sky, Team Ineos have dominated the Tour de France, and the only year they didn't was 2014 when Froome crashed out. Every other year they have dominated the race, and
every other year they've had a couple of people in the mix, haven't they? Or, you know, a lot of the, well, certainly in the more recent years
they still have. Let's be paradoxical. It was a very bad day for Team Ineos today, right? But I saw on Twitter, on Facebook, on the internet, and the various networks, end of an era. Like, but Bernal is not ended by any. No. You know, he's still very, very young, and maybe he speak too early. You remember we had this discussion in the past where whether, you know, it been you know, launched into the Grand Tours battle a little bit too early in his career. I mean, you know, that's what the old school coaches and director sportif were saying. Oh yeah, and then you shouldn't spoil such a talent so young. I doubt it's finished for Bernal. And on top of that, Chris Froome won't be with Team Ineos next season. But Froome was not there. Geraint Thomas is somewhere else. And you have two Team Ineos riders in the top 10 of the GC.
Richie Porte and Adam Yates.
So next
good year for Ineos 2021.
Yeah. So exactly. So to say it's good the end of an era when you actually have two guys and Bernal can only perform better next year, you might have Geraint Thomas back and Yates and Richie Porte, okay, they're aging riders, but into the picture next season, I guess it's not the end of an
but
era.
But I would say that the whole team is underperforming. I mean, Luke Rowe is a guy who, on a stage like this, you would see him quite late on in the stage.
Perhaps not doing a Wout van Aert, but certainly doing something...
Something not dissimilar.
Maybe the first or second climb, a bit of a Hessink.
Yeah, but I think it all kind of flows in a way from the leader and how strong the leader is. And, you know...
Well, we saw, didn't we? Carapaz wobble, Amador wobble, Van Baarle nowhere. Kwiatkowski was just looking after Bernal. But you're right, Francois. Bernal's 23, and last year he won the Tour by flying so far beneath the radar. We didn't really, we were all looking really at Geraint Thomas until the final few days of the Tour. And I suppose the thing that is so dramatic about it is, when was the last time a defending champion in the Tour was dropped 13 kilometres from the top of a summit finish while still in the thick of the GC battle and losing 7 minutes? I mean, that doesn't happen very often, does it?
The one I thought of was actually Jan Ulrich, you know? Mm. He won the Tour in 97, aged 22. So he was 22 when he was second at the Tour de France, 23 when he won it, which was exceptional. The way that he won it in 97, we thought, this guy's going to win the next 10, which is pretty much what we thought maybe with Bernal last year. And the following year, it kind of all went wrong for Ulrich, and he never won the Tour again. I don't think the same thing will happen with Bernal, because I don't think he's the same sort of personality. I don't think he has the same the same flaws that Ulrich had, as well.
You can't even say despite the flaws of Ulrich that you know, his level kind of went down dramatically. He was on the podium, you know, more times than Raymond Poulidor, and as we know, it was a different era with and the guy who beat him is a name we can't pronounce anymore. So, I really can't see Bernal, you know, not recovering from this. There's obviously an issue we don't know about, and probably because it's happened with other teams. I mean, I have good links in. Within the Groupama FDJ team and Thibaut Pinot, that when your leader is not performing well and you know it, you know, you try to hide it to the rest of the peloton. You try to hide it to the press. You try to hide it from the fans, maybe. But the team are aware, and the way Team Ineos have been riding on this Tour, you know, seem to hint at the fact that maybe Bernal had issues we didn't know about, and that we're probably going to learn sooner or later. But you know, you could feel it, especially today, even before Bernal cracked, that something was not going entirely right, you know, within the team.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. If you go to scienceandsport.com, you can get 25% off with the code Francois.
SISCP25.
That's great. I'm glad you know it, because Stephen Moon, the chief executive of Science and Sport, tweeted us today saying how impressed he was. There's a TJV again. He tweeted us saying how impressed he was that Francois knew the discount code. Actually, in his tweet, got the discount code wrong. So, Stephen, if you are using the discount code to get 25% off Science and Sport products, you'll find that one doesn't work. But he probably doesn't need the discount code, does he?
You know why? It's only yesterday that I understand what the code meant.
Well, that's a good way of remembering it.
I mean,
bats flying around.
Mm. I mean, it's not exactly a sort of wartime code that needs cracking, is it? You don't need the Enigma machine to crack that code. And there goes Egan Bernal after the TJV.
Oh, Lionel, that's unfair. What else from today then, chaps? What caught your eye?
You know, strange little bits and pieces. I I decided tomorrow, because I haven't done it yet, I'm going to call an old friend of mine. He probably thinks I'm dead because I haven't called him in the, on the tour yet. And it's José Luis Arrieta, the Movistar team director, because I usually call him not every day, but very frequently on the tour, and he must be worried about me. I was a little bit worried about him as well and about the Movistar team. But look at them, you know.
Enric Mas is ghosted into eighth overall. Yeah. He's riding Ala Zubeldia, isn't he, really?
Absolutely. And in the same time, Alejandro Valverde was in the top 10 of the stage today, and I learned from, you know, I received official stats, I don't know if you get those as well, guys, from the tour, and apparently it's the first time a rider over 40 finishes in the top 10 in the Tour de France in the hors category climb. So, you know, credits or
wow.
to you know, the you know, evergreen Valverde. So I thought it was, you know, nice to mention Movistar. They're also top of the team classification. So yeah, I mean, you know, Enric Mas, maybe it's time we, you know, get interested in this guy. I mean, we know his potential. We know he's one of the Spanish hopefuls.
Yeah, but he's riding a very steady race, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He's not. Yeah, I mean, Landa is just ahead of him in seventh. Richie Port, the big surprise, we heard from him in the podcast last night, he held on to the grey jersey today. But he rode very well again today, and I think we expect maybe a bit more from Mikel Landa, but I just think with the strength of the Jumbo-Visma team on that climb, it wasn't set up for people to attack. It was a very brave move by Adam Yates. You know, he was sort of risking his overall position, and he's up to fifth now, in doing that, and credit to him for that. But understandably, the other riders were not willing to really to do that, because by doing that, you do risk blowing yourself up in terms of GC. And all those guys had GC positions to defend there.
And maybe it's you know, the Yates brothers are always kind of puzzling and exciting riders to watch, and Adam Yates' position in Mitchelton Scott this tour is an odd one, as often is the case with him. In the last couple of tours, he was going for GC and he was, you know, useless. And well, sorry, Adam, but it was the case. This year he was going for stage wins, and he might equal, I mean, he's fifth. He might equal his best position in the tour, which when he, you know, won the white jersey and finished fourth. So maybe that's the way to, you know, if you well, maybe, you know, for Team Ineos, if you want Adam Yates to perform well, tell him he's not good for GC.
I would say that the third spot on the podium is still very much up for grabs for any of those guys up there. I mean, Uran is there at the moment, but Lopez, Yates, Port, Landa, I think any of those guys could finish there. Not sure about Mass, but I think any of those others could target that.
Absolutely. The question now is, what do Team Ineos do to salvage something from the Tour de France? We know Dave Brailsford, you know, would describe himself as a terrible loser, doesn't like not being in the race in the Tour de France. Do you remember in
2014 was amazing, wasn't it?
2014,
we kept bumping into him at other team buses. Yeah, and he was just
didn't know what to do with himself.
Nobody wanted to speak to him because they weren't the story in the race.
No, yeah. And they'll be in the same position again. I mean, they do have riders who could go in breaks. Castroviejo, I think Amador, Dylan Van Baarle's. If Sivakov's going better, yeah, they will have people who can go in the breaks, but. It's going to be hard, especially with Jumbo-Visma's strength in depth and the three mountain stages to come after the rest day. It won't be easy for breakaways, I don't think, unless it's a case of just letting something completely go, you know, out by sort of 10 minutes and then just leaving them out there. It's going to take that sort of break to see anyone else contesting stage wins. Otherwise, it's going to be the Pog and Rog show, isn't it? And the interesting thing will be whether Pogacar can somehow get himself closer to Roglic over those three stages and give himself a chance for La Planche des Belles Filles. I mean
the difference between now and the Sky Ineos dominated tours was that usually, through efforts like today's, the lead was unassailable. And as you say, Lionel, it's not. It's very, very close. And your description, Francois, of Pogacar as the stone in the shoe is absolutely right. That's what he is. And We keep hearing about how they're great friends, Pogacar and Roglic. I'm not sure that they...
Well, I asked Tony Gruden, our Slovenian friend, journalist covering the tour. He's back out on the tour for the final week. I mean, what a final week for him. He's got the top two on GC for a small nation. I think only one Slovenian had ridden the tour in its first 80 years, and then the second Slovenian rode the tour in 1986, Francois, your first tour. His surname was Cern. I can't remember his first name, unfortunately, at the moment. But Slovenia is it's a small country, and they've got the top two on GC. I mean, we always say in the UK, don't we, it's about the size of Wales. Well, it is about the size of Wales, with a population, I think, of around about the same size as Northern Ireland. Might have to check that, actually, but I think that's part of my research off the top of my head there. If not, I'll put it in corrections corner tomorrow. But he said that Pogacar and Roglic are... they are friendly and they get on well, and there's a good camaraderie between the Slovenian riders, but they're kind of different generations, really. Roglic is 30, Pogacar is 21. That's quite an age gap, really, when you're in your 20s. They're not bosom pals, and they didn't come up through cycling in the same way.
And
as
Roglic
we
wanted to win the stage today, no question about that. Population of Slovenia is 2,078,938.
Going back, shortly and to wrap it up, to Team Ineos, I think that in a way we suspected it would happen when we learned about the squad was for the lineup for the tour was announced. We tried to convince ourselves, it's a better team than it would have been with Froome and Thomas, but there was lots of wishful thinking in that, and as soon as we saw that Sivakov, who was really the up and coming rider, was supposed to be really the guy helping out Bernal in the mountains, and maybe being the plan B in case things didn't go well, as we know he crashed and was from day one and was not there. Carapaz never showed anything special either as a teammate or for his own personal ambition. I think we saw him attack lamely once or twice, maybe.
You'd have to say Carapaz has been disappointing. He has crashed, but he was 27 minutes down today. That's not what he was brought here for. It was a young team. There were cracks last year in that team. They weren't, they kind of sneaked into the yellow jersey in the end, but they weren't the force of old. And this year's kind of confirmed that. I mean, Froome and Thomas, they didn't, on performances, it was the right decision not to bring them. Now in Italy, in Tirreno Adriatico, Geraint Thomas looks to be a kind of new man, and maybe all he needed was a rest. He, on the evidence of the races before the tour, he didn't really deserve his place in the team.
Yeah, some guys, could come up in the third week, and he might have been there. I mean, it's always difficult to say. I don't know about the question of what can Team Ineos do now. I mean, unfortunately, there's not many. I mean, the mountain is here to stay once again, because otherwise a guy like Kwiatkowski, we know, is capable of winning stages and winning races if he's given the go ahead to go, and that's maybe the only plan. Put Kwiatko in a breakaway and hope for him to go all the way.
I mean, a lot of people would love to see that, because Kwiatkowski is a guy who people consider wasted in that role. It would be great to see him show his talents in a different kind of context. We should wrap things up, chap, shall we? We're going to go and have dinner somewhere. We're here for two nights, actually, Tomorrow we're going to ride around the lake, aren't we, Lionel?
Yeah, the last time I rode around the lake was in 2011 when I was here on the Dauphiné. I rode around with Dave Brailsford, Shane Sutton and Carsten Jeppesen, logistics boss at the time of Team Sky. And I had Shane Sutton telling me I was overweight and needed to basically not eat as much. He put it pretty bluntly, to be honest. And Dave Brailsford was going reasonably well, but not as well as he rides now. When we see him riding on the course each day, or not each, we don't see him each day, but we do see him every now and again.
Yeah, he's very, well, he rides his bike a lot, doesn't he? Yeah. Very fit.
Could have made the team, maybe.
Well, he did. He did joke to that effect in the first week. We can probably say that now. Anyway... Let's wrap things up. We're gonna ride around the lake. I'm gonna speak to Richard Plug, the boss at Jumbo Visma, tomorrow afternoon. I saw him actually deep in conversation with Carson Jeppesen, who's the sort of operations boss at Team Ineos Grenadier, at the start this morning, which was interesting. But lots of questions for him. You know, they're on the one hand on the cusp of winning the Tour de France, but on the other hand, with only a very fragile lead, so everything's up for grabs. Let's go and have dinner. Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois. Before we go, we're going to say some thank yous to friends of the podcast. From me, a big thank you to David Pitchler, Miki Vikovic, Henry Peterkin, Mark Dolby, Brian Wilburn, and Scott Henshaw.
And a big thank you to Kevin Keane, Philip Tracy, Andrew Jones, Stephanie Backlin, Tim Perslow, and Richard Spate.
And a grand merci to Rob Crichton, Paul
Crichton. Gardner. Sorry, pronunciation police.
Crichton?
Crichton.
Rob, yeah. Crichton, sorry, Rob. Paul Garner, Dean Davis, Mark Affuso, Ian McDermott, and John Wood.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.